Hello, and welcome to the Honest Hour podcast. I am Christina Mazurek, your host, and I believe that to be honest is to try to convince someone of your discovered truth of something. Your honesty is your work, your story, your relationships, and your worldview. The Honest Hour podcast is a collective voice of global influences. It is through honest conversations out loud that we can rise together through a more diverse understanding of the world. This is your honesty. Enjoy today's episode. Hey guys, thanks for tuning in. Welcome back to the Honest Hour podcast. I am just going to start this eighth attempt of recording an intro by being completely honest, because this is the Honest Hour podcast. It has been a day. I'm about 29 weeks pregnant now, feeling quite tired, got a long way to go yet. Sent my kids off to school. Everything was going great. I got my lighting set up. I was sitting here with my guest ready to record, and I got a message from my son's school that he's not feeling well, along with 9 other people at his in his classroom. So something is going around. Alas, he came home, and thank goodness my husband was working from home today so he could help and I could still record with our guest today. But I just felt like, since this is the Honest Hour podcast and I have struggled with technology this morning, with scheduling, with our family's health, with finding my confidence in recording today and re-recording, I just had to break the ice and tell you that that's what's going on in my world. So if you're listening to this today and you feel like you're failing, but you're trying to show up and do it anyways, you are not alone. So, without further ado, let me get to the introduction for today's guest. Our guest today is Meg Fora. If you're not familiar with her work, she is an occupational therapist, an infant specialist, and the co-author of 8 parenting titles, including the best-selling books Baby Sense and Weaning Sense. Meg has been working with parents for over 20 years, starting out in her own clinical practice in South Africa. Today, Meg has helped thousands of parents across the globe get out of survival mode and enter their own rhythm of modern, conscious parenting. I'm loving that term lately. As a parenting expert and a mom of 3, Meg understands your challenges, and she has made it her life's work to support parents with confidence by providing balanced, down-to-earth guidance for raising resilient and happy children. You'll hear it all in today's episode, but what I loved most about Meg's approach is that she truly dives into the data and the science on raising self-regulated kids. She also talks about how what is a functional family is going to look different from family to family, that what might work for one person might not work for another person, and that's okay. That's why I think it's so important that we as parents educate ourselves on what to expect when it comes to our child's milestones and development, and that by empowering ourselves, we can not only learn to understand our children better and create an environment that works well for them and for us, but we can really stop the comparison game and feel confident in our own parenting journey. Enjoy this episode. If you would like to, please subscribe to the podcast, leave a review, share it on social. All of those things help, and I am most grateful. Thank you again for bearing with me and all my honesty. Lots of love. Enjoy. Hey guys, welcome back to this podcast. Before we get started on today's episode, I wanted to share something with you. If you enjoy my parenting-focused podcast, you will love Meg Faree's new podcast, Sense by Meg Faree. Meg is an OT and parenting expert and a baby guru who I have turned to many times on my parenting journey. So when I heard that she had her own podcast, I was all ears. Meg's podcasts vary between giving advice to real moms about their parenting journeys to the occasional guest expert, such as my personal favorite, which is the episode with pediatric dietitian Kath McGaw on weaning your baby. So if you are looking for real-world practical advice, do head on over to Sense by Meg Faree. Thank you for listening and enjoy today's episode. Good morning, Meg. Thank you again so much for joining the Honest Hour podcast for a second time. I feel so honored to be chatting to you twice. How are you doing today?
Very well, thank you, Christina. It's just such an honor to be here with you on your podcast.
I'm so, so pleased. And I can't wait to share some wisdom with my audience and also relearn some information I've probably forgotten myself. I'm about to be a mom for the third time, as you know. And if it's anything like the second time, you get reminded very quickly that you forget everything.
You definitely do. I remember that very clearly from my third baby. Like, wow, this is, surely I should know this all. I've written a few books and this is my third child. But it is always like a new journey.
Well, it is such a relief and so humbling to hear that even Meg Fora forgets how to parent. And we have to just use all of these tools and tricks. So before we get into it all, I'm sure everyone listening today has already heard of you and read some of your brilliant books or joined your courses. For people who have not heard of you yet, can you give us a little bit of an intro and what you're all about?
Yeah, so like most people, I have multiple but different backgrounds. My professional and I guess my educational background is that I'm a qualified occupational therapist, qualified at UCT, and then actually practiced in America for a while and then back in South Africa. And so professionally, I've always had a practice where I see fussy babies, babies with sleep problems, babies who are battling emotionally, or sometimes mums who are battling to negotiate new parenthood emotionally. So that's kind of my professional background. I guess in terms of my skill set, I'm a communicator. So I took what I learned as an occupational therapist and in my practice, and really in everything that I've done, I've communicated it with mums. So it's been everything from communicating through written word, like my 8 books. Wow. It has been communicating in spoken word, my podcast, which is Sense by Meg Fora, and then the Baby Sense seminars, the baby meetups, all of those are kind of spoken word. And then also digital. I have a website, have always had a website, and more recently have a parenting application called ParentSense. So I guess, where I come from professionally is as an OT, but where my skill set lies is as a communicator. And then in terms of where my passion lies, I'm a mum of 3, and I think on that journey to becoming a mum, I had the very real experience of feeling completely out of my depth, like most parents do, particularly yes. As a first-time mom. I was completely lost and kind of thought, hold on, I should have all the answers to this. I've studied this. I've worked with mums. And yet I felt completely out of my depth. And as you alluded to just now, even my second and my third baby, I felt the same way. And that feeling has never left me. I think it's the most real feeling that I use every day when I'm working with mums, is that feeling of being a little bit lost, lacking some confidence, having so many questions and not having the answers. And so that's what's given me my why. I am absolutely passionate about mums and their babies, and trying to make their relationship with their babies and their journey a little bit easier.
Amazing. Well, we are so blessed that someone who has all the knowledge that you have not only shares the vulnerability of saying you've also struggled yourself, and putting into practice what you know is often harder than we think, but also that you are a scientist essentially, and you work with parents and with children, and you're not only going to sit in the field of your study, but you're going to put it in tangible, digestible words for all of us layman people.
Absolutely.
I think that's brilliant. Mm-hmm. We need it.
Yeah. No, and I think it's important. You know, I mean, I think the science of parenting is quite remarkable. It's a growing body of knowledge. It's grounded somewhat in the science of psychology, somewhat in the science of neuropsychology, and then there's all the physical realms as well. And, you know, to communicate that sensibly is so critically important, because as we know, and particularly with social media, which by the way, didn't exist when my first child was born, if you can imagine an era without social media. But with social media, it's really, really confusing. The noise that we hear and the information we hear, it really does need to be demystified, debunked, and looked at through the lens of science. There's no question.
I agree. There's so much information out there. And that's why I'm so grateful that you're putting it into very digestible terms for us. I wanted to talk a little bit more. You mentioned your app, the ParentSense app. I've downloaded it. I'm so excited to start using it when Bubba is here. And that brings me to the subject of sleep and routines. Mm. So yes. Your app, is it for helping mothers establish a routine for their babies and better regulated sleep?
Yeah, that's really in a nutshell what it's about. I mean, I think, you know, we always talk about the fact that it kind of demystifies or takes the guesswork out of parenting because it gives you a lot of answers on a number of things. There are actually four different domains on the app, which is health, sleep, feeding, and play. And those are kind of the four different, what we call occupations of babies. That's where the word occupational therapist comes from. So babies have occupations or things that they have to kind of conquer and master, and sleep is very much one of those. A big part of the app is helping moms to create flexible routines. So it's a guideline. It's not a rigid routine, but it's a guideline that helps you to understand when your baby should be doing what they need to do, when they should be feeding, and when they should be sleeping. And we know that if you do follow a routine of sorts in terms of sleep, you do end up with a better sleeper and a baby who's more likely to sleep through the night. So yeah, that is the focus of the app.
That's incredible. What are most of the parents that you come into contact with struggling with the most when it comes to sleep?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think habits ultimately become, I mean, if there's only one thing that I had to narrow it down to, it ultimately becomes habits. But habits arise because of a multitude of other things, you know. And so when I talk about habits, I'm talking
baby habits or the parents' habits?
Good question. Interlinked. But okay. the baby develops habits that mean that they cannot self-settle themselves. They need the mum to be able to help them, or dad. So a very common habit would be the feed to sleep habit, or the rock to sleep habit, or there might be the, you know, lie with me habit, or whatever it is. You can have a look at, I mean, there could be any multitude of things. And by the way, all of these so-called habits or sleep associations can actually be completely functional and so-called normal. And I think it's very important when we start to look at function and dysfunction is that we recognize that what's functional for one parent is not functional necessarily for another parent, which is why,
right,
you know, there can be no judgment when it comes to parenting because your journey is different to the next mum. So
exactly.
One mum might feel that so-called habit of feeding her baby to sleep all the way through into the toddler years is something that she's comfortable with, likes, and it works for her family. And that then becomes functional. It's a functional sleep association. It's something that works for the mum. Other mums don't want to be held hostage by being up throughout the night to put their little one to sleep every time they wake up, so that, you know, by feeding them. And for them, the habit of feed to sleep is dysfunctional, and it makes them feel tired, unsuccessful, you know, really low, whatever it is, you know. So I think it's always important when we look at habits to just see them in the context of each mum and baby, or we call them a dyad, parent-infant dyad, being completely unique. Certainly the habits that most commonly come through to me are the feed to sleep and rock to sleep habits. Often those develop on the back of other problems that precede that. So here's an example. The baby actually might have been ill, and this is a very common scenario. Baby develops an ear infection. They're not very well. Mum gets up in the night because she knows her baby's not well. They're running a bit of a fever, and the only way she can get her baby to sleep is to feed them to sleep. And
right,
you know, kind of a week down the line, the cold is gone or the ear infection's gone, and the habit is entrenched. And
yes,
so habits very often develop on the back of some other issue. And that's why in my sleep course, which is available on the app, we have 10 masterclasses in that course. And the reason we have 10 masterclasses is because there really are 10 facets that need to be looked at before we even start to think about breaking habits. And so those 10 things could be things like, is your baby's nutrition adequate? Are they having enough food, milk or solids, depending on their age, in daylight hours to see them through the night, for instance? Or another one could be health, you know. Do they have reflux? Are they kind of under 10 weeks of age, they're suffering with reflux, and that's why they are not able to sleep more than 45 minutes at a stretch? So there's a lot that we need to look at in terms of sleep before we get on to kind of, I guess, what's the most common thing, and that's habits.
Right. So I want to get into a little bit of the nitty-gritty when we talk about sleep, because I think there, like you mentioned before, there tends to be judgment in the world of parenting, because what works well for one person might not be adoptable by another family. And it's because all of our routines and our family's needs and cultures and so many different things are different. And so when we talk about a baby's sleep, if we could have a benchmark for what is developmentally normal, looking at the science, at what age should an infant be able to sort of be able to soothe themselves to sleep, even when they have like a moment where they wake up in the night? At what point should they be essentially sleeping through the night?
Yeah, so I'm going to give you the norms, but before I do, I think it's very important to preface it by saying that all babies are different, which is a very obvious statement, but babies have different sensory personalities. And if any mom hasn't done my sensory personality course, it's an absolute must. It's also in the app, and actually it's free of charge in the app. So go and do it. It's amazing. Called the Sensory Baby. And that helps you to develop the awareness of what your baby's sensory personality is, because some babies, like for instance, your settled baby, their norms could be sleeping through at 6 weeks of age. They can sleep through really early. And in fact, my middle child was a settled baby, and they can do that. People don't believe it, but they truly can. Your slow to warm up baby takes a lot longer to sleep through the night. And you can, you know, every little hiccup, whether it's teething or mom having a new baby or starting new daycare, every single one of those things will actually disrupt sleep for the slow to warm up baby. So you can see that babies' sensory temperaments can have really massive impacts on when they sleep through the night. So to have a benchmark of all babies sleep through the night at this date is just not realistic at all. Having said that, there are norms that we do expect, and I'll just take you through them for the first 2 years of life. So in the early days, stating the obvious, babies need to wake at night to feed, and that is by and large almost all babies. Occasionally, babies will sleep through at about 4 or 5 weeks of age. It's very unusual. They're usually settled babies. And when we talk about sleeping through the night, we're talking about a stretch of 10 to 12 hours. So that's a really long stretch for a baby that age, and really quite surprising when that does happen. But by far, the majority of babies need nutritional support at night. And that means that from the time your baby is born, they'll probably be feeding as frequently at night as they do during the day. By 6 weeks of age, almost all babies have differentiated day and night. And so they're having one long stretch at night, which can be 6 to 7 hours, which means they can go down at like 6 in the evening and wake at 12 at night. So, you know, by 6 to 8 weeks, you can actually start to have these really nice long stretches in the first part of the evening. And then they default back to the 3 hourly after that, you know, especially if they're breastfed, they'll go back to 3 hourly. Yes. And so that, and then that becomes incrementally better and better until about 17 weeks of age. Moms can be getting really long stretches until about 2 in the morning or maybe even 3 in the morning, one long stretch. And then really it's only one night feed, because the next night feed is at 5 or 6 in the morning, which is really a morning feed. So as you approach, most babies, as they're approaching 17 weeks, are only having one waking at night. And if babies are waking significantly more than that, then I would recommend the mum start to rule out the basics and work out what's going on. Then, as life would have it, it's a little bit cruel, because at about 17 weeks, we have what we call the 17-week sleep regression, which most babies do experience. And what happens is that your baby who was stretching maybe 8 hours and then only needing one feed after that now suddenly starts to go maybe only 6 hours again. And so suddenly you've got another feed back at midnight or even 11 p.m. And it's a killer, because you think, hold on, I'd completely had this waxed. I was going in the right direction. We were moving towards, you know, kind of having my baby sleep through the night, and now we've gone completely backwards. And it's an absolute killer emotionally, because you think, what am I going to do? And that is a very, very common time for a sleep regression. And it coincides with when babies start to need to learn to self-soothe, interestingly. And the next phase of sleep is that learning to self-soothe phase, which happens between about 4 to 6 months of age, where little ones need to learn to self-settle. And they can learn to self-settle. And anybody who says that babies shouldn't be self-soothing has not read the literature on self-regulation. But self-regulation means that little ones can start to actually settle themselves. And there are certain things parents can do to support that, well, have to do to support that. So that by the time the little one reaches about 6 months of age, they're really only having one night feed in the early hours of the morning. And that then stretches out until about 8 months, little ones are sleeping right the way through the night. And that 10 to 12 hours sleep all the way through the night should be the pattern that you can see all the way through into the toddler years and ongoing. So that, in a nutshell, is the trajectory that we should see in a typically developing baby who is hitting the milestones, the sleep milestones that we know that little ones need.
So in a nutshell, if you've already taken the time to understand and help regulate the sensory profile of your baby, all babies at the latest should be hopefully sleeping through the night and learning to self-regulate by about 8 months. Is that what I hear you saying?
Yeah. So they're learning to self-regulate earlier than that, between about 4 to 6 months, but they've actually kind of got it mastered at around about 8 months, because there's a little bit of a sleep upheaval at around about that time that involves separation anxiety. And once they move through that, they should be sleeping through the night. Yeah. And, you know, I think when we say all babies should, you know, you'll get your sensitive babies, which is one of our sensory personalities, and they really don't sleep through very easily. They're very, very tricky sleepers. The smallest thing upends them, and then they're back to square one. So you do get babies for whom this is really tricky. And I think, you know, what's the beauty of the sensory personality theory is that it takes the onus off the parent. Because very often as a mum, you look at yourself and you go, I'm such a failure. You know, like every other mum's getting this right. Like everybody else is, it's all sorted for them. And when you start to realize that it's got to do with the baby as well, it takes a bit of the pressure off us as mums, because we know that we're dealing with a unique sensory profile here. And that might be the reason why your little one's not sleeping.
And I think that's a takeaway message for all moms listening today. When it comes to any part of the parenting journey or your child's development, that a part of the scenario comes down to nature and another part of the scenario comes down to nurture. And it doesn't come down explicitly to what we are doing as parents. So I think it's so important, as you say, to look at the science, to educate ourselves, to really understand our own children and create the environment that's going to really work well and be functional for them and for our family. And that will look completely different from family to family. I wanted to spend a bit more time talking about the subject of co-regulation and then eventually the self-regulation. So what does this look like for new moms with the newborns and then moving into the self-regulation stage? How do we help our children co-regulate? And then what does it look like when they are finally self-regulating?
Yeah. So, you know, I love this term co-regulation. I think that it's the most important soft skill of mothering and of parenting. I really do. So what is co-regulation? Co-regulation is it's a uniquely human skill. It involves reading the other emotion and the other mind of the other person. It's getting into their headspace, understanding their needs, and then articulating for them what they actually need. And so little babies are born unable to self-regulate on any level. And when we look at what self-regulation is, it is everything from the most basic, which is physiological self-regulation, which is like regulating my body temperature. Babies are born unable to do that. That's why we make sure that they're covered in the right amount of clothing and that they don't have too many layers or not overheating. So at a very basic level, they don't self-regulate. And it moves all the way up through sensory regulation, emotional regulation, behavioral regulation, and ultimately cognitive regulation. And again, you know, you can go into one of my courses and you'll be able to find out more if you're interested in the kind of theory of self-regulation. Now, all babies begin, as I said, depend on their mother. So let's just take the skill of self-regulating feeding. Well, I mean, in utero, the baby doesn't have to think about anything, doesn't even have to communicate their hunger because it's on tap. Your baby right now is getting all the nutrients it needs on tap without having to communicate at all. The two-month-old has to start to communicate their hunger needs. So eventually, they're starting to take on a little bit of self-regulating capacity on feeding in that they can communicate. An in-tune mother then reads that signal and she then feeds her baby. So she starts to actually co-regulate already just in the feeding space for her little one. And so what she does is she starts to say things like, I can see you hungry, my little one. Oh, who's a hungry little one? Come, let's see. Are you hungry? Come, let's see. Here, we're going to get some num-nums. And she starts to position her baby against her breast. And her baby knows what's coming. They know and they learn that this is now that they're going to be fed. And that's a beautiful example of a mum co-regulating. And that's in the feeding space. Now, in every area of life, mums start to co-regulate for their little ones. They read their signals. They articulate and give their babies the narrative. They then do a response. And then ultimately, they start to give that responsibility over to the baby. So with your four-year-old, you can see he's hungry. You say the same thing you said to him when he was 2 months old, which is, oh, I can see you hungry. But you don't necessarily whip out the breast if you're no longer breastfeeding. You'll say, come, let's go and see what's in the fridge, or let's go see what's in the snack drawer that I've already set up for you with your healthy snacks. And ultimately, a month later, you can say, go and see what's in the snack drawer that mommy set up for you with your snacks. Because what you've done is you've given your four-year-old the independence to start to actually manage their appetite and their satiety on their own. And so it's a gradual journey. And, you know, I've always talked about co-regulation as a dance, because it starts off with the mom having a huge amount of responsibility, or the dad having all the responsibility. And then kind of this dance of giving over a bit of responsibility, taking it back, giving it over, taking it back, until eventually you hand over all responsibility and you've got this independent child. And I think that dance is so beautiful. It also actually is the conundrum of parenting, because in part, we want our little ones to stay small, little, dependent, snuggly little things. And we don't want them to fly the coop, you know, we don't want them to be fully dependent, independent. But actually, that's ultimately what parenting is about, is building right. them up for independence.
Yeah, 100%. I feel like I go through phases of doing this well, and other phases of feeling like I'm completely out of my depth in the journey of parenting that I'm on. For example, when you describe the sensory profiles, I think I had, what did you call it? The really good sleepers. What did you call them?
Settled babies.
Settled babies. So I was lucky, and we'll see what happens the third time around. But my two boys were both sleeping through the night by 3 months. And I don't know. It was wonderful. I really enjoyed the first year of their life. I didn't struggle in the newborn and first year of life parenting stage. I felt like I was a complete natural. And then when we got to the toddler years for both of them, wow, that was an absolute challenge for me. I had to educate myself so much, and I'm still doing it now, on helping identify, well, first of all, learn about how their development works. And second of all, identify the emotions that they were experiencing at different times. And then, you know, teaching myself how to get down to their level and put words and give language for those emotions to help them learn how to process it, instead of just end the emotion or give in or punish mm-hmm. or consequence, like, which are all the bad things. I needed to learn how to help them learn to understand themselves and their Good. Emotions and learn to regulate themselves in a healthy way. And even now, my 7-year-old, he's started to get, like, you know, a little bit of homework every day from school. And I love this part of parenting. I sit down with him and I love seeing how he's learning and applying the knowledge he gets from school into other situations. And I've recently told myself, you need to stop reading the homework assignment for him. He actually is reading books. He has readers. You need to give him the homework assignment and let him look at the line and read it. I need to constantly remind myself that my job is to empower them to do, instead mm-hmm. of do for them. As much as I take yeah. so much pride in that role, I won't be doing my job well if they become adults one day and they still rely on me to make decisions for themselves.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, there's a lovely word. And when I first wrote Baby Sense, which goes back many years, just after my second child was born, I wanted to put this word into the book and my publisher wouldn't let me, but the word was scaffolding. And she said, you know, it's too much of an engineering term. Like, you can't put scaffolding into a parenting book. And so we took scaffolding out of the book. But that's actually ultimately what we're doing. And we do it at every phase of our baby's life, you know, whether it's teaching them as a newborn to stay calm in the presence of stimulation, which is actually one of your first self-regulation strategies, or whether it's teaching them to sleep through the night, or if it's teaching a 7-year-old to read, or teaching a 17-year-old to drive a car. And, you know, each of these things, we're scaffolding them, we're building them, we're giving them the infrastructure in which they can actually grow and develop. And it does, I mean, it changes all the time. Just when you think you've got it right, you know, development actually throws you a curveball. And, you know, so just as you kind of get the reading and the primary school right, they turn into tweens. And then it's like, oh my goodness, where do I go now? How do I parent this? So there are challenges all the way along the way. But I think what's really important is that if parents have that soft skill, and, you know, soft skills are so critically important in life, but if you have the soft skill of nurturing and scaffolding and co-regulating the newborn, the colicky newborn, it becomes much easier to get back into that frame of mind when you've got the 16-year-old who's kind of pushing the boundaries and, you know, is trying alcohol, because, that's a whole nother phase that you need to deal with them. And if you've honed your skills of being a co-regulator, you can do it again and again and again.
Amazing. Well, I'm really nervous about that stage. So I'm just going to focus on the one I'm in. But I know from our previous chats as well that there's never a dull moment. And this is definitely a role in life that will always keep us on our toes.
Absolutely.
I wanted to speak a little bit more about daily routines and then how they affect our sleep routines as well. So can you tell the people listening today, how do we look at a feeding routine and the sleep routine, and how do the two relate?
Yeah, so they are very different, and they develop at different stages as well. So your sleep routine actually can actually start to develop quite early on after your baby's born, from about 2 weeks. And what I mean by that is that we have what we call wake windows or wake times in between sleep. So that's the time taken from the end of a sleep to the beginning of the next sleep. And that awake period is governed by the capacity of the infant brain at a different age and stage for interaction. So the capacity for interaction of a two-week-old is much shorter and much less intense than, for instance, a two-year-old. I mean, that's very obvious. A two-week-old needs downtime much more frequently than a two-year-old. And a two-year-old needs downtime more than a 20-year-old, you know, or we do. So that develops developmentally. And we called them actually in baby sense the awake times. And actually that piece of work when we wrote it, which was back in 2002, it was the first time that we had ever had worldwide had these awake windows being actually looked at. And what we know from them is that they can be very, very short in the early days, 45 minutes to an hour for a newborn, and then going up to 4 to 5 hours towards the end of the first year of life. So it incrementally increases. Now, if you're watching awake times, your baby will start to fall into a sleep routine. And from 0 to 6 months, that's all you watch is just the awake windows. You just watch those wake windows. And on the ParentSense app, it's on the home screen, top left button, your awake windows are always there. So you know exactly how long your baby should be. You know, you don't have to go back and reference it in a book, and we change it as your baby gets older so that it is always correct for your baby's age. So sleep routines can be set up relatively early in terms of awake times. The second piece of sleep routines that can be set up is the midday routine. And that midday sleep becomes the kind of pivotal sleep all the way through until the preschool years, where a little one needs some downtime in the middle of the day. And you know, you get some little ones who at 3 years old are no longer actually sleeping in that sleep. They're just resting. But it is a time of day where they really do need to rest. And that midday sleep from 6 months old, you start to really focus in on that being in a consistent sleep space with all the nurturing kind of sleep comforters associated with it, including a little bit of a milk feed just before that sleep so that they can sleep a little bit longer. And that's the first sleep of the day that they actually start to link the sleep cycles of. So instead of being a 45-minute sleep, it becomes an hour and a half sleep. So that's a very important piece of the sleep routine. And then the third very important part of the sleep routine is the bedtime routine, because we want good bedtime hygiene for all of us involves a really rigid sleep routine. So sleep routines start relatively early on. You can start watching awake times from 2 weeks onwards and getting your little one into a day sleep routine. And if you're using the app will actually give you the times for your babies that your baby should be going to sleep. Then you've got your feed routines. Sorry.
No, go
Did you
ahead.
Want to say something? No, yeah. Mm-mm. So, and then you've got your feed routines, and the feed routines are a different kettle of fish because there's more controversy around feed routines. And part of that has been that you will hear people say, you know, do not feed your baby on routine. Babies need to demand feed. You know, feed routines disrupt breast milk supply. So there's a lot of controversy around feed routines. And to be honest with you, rightly so. When I was a new mum, and I think, you know, I said to you that I identify very closely with anxiety that mums might feel in the early days because I felt such high anxiety. I had two advisors, and that was my problem. And the one was my antenatal teacher, a lady called Debbie. And Debbie was a real kind of go with the flow, laid back, had a laid back approach to raising babies. She'd actually never had a baby of her own. And she said, you don't demand feed at all hours of the day and expect to be breastfeeding 20 out of 24 hours of a day. Well, that didn't sit very well with me because I was one of those people who needed a little bit of order in my day. And so I didn't love what she'd said. And I pushed against it and then went and found another voice. And at the time, there was a woman in Cape Town called Lynn, and many of you would have probably gone to her, you know, if you have had babies my baby's age. And she was pretty much like the Gina Ford of Cape Town. And she said, from day one, you breastfeed your baby every 4 hours and never more frequently from the day one of birth. And of course, what I know now and what any sensible mom would know is that, you know, if you don't breastfeed your baby unless it's 4 hours have passed, you're not going to establish milk supply. And of course, no surprises there. Third day came along, my breast milk supply was really not great. And breastfeeding for me was really, really tricky. Luckily, I managed to, bring it together and actually managed to breastfeed all three of my babies well, you know, even though that I'd had that tricky start of advice. Yes. Now, those two are very polarized pieces of advice, but it is an example of where my life started. So that was that either to have absolutely no feed routine and demand feed, or to have a very rigid feed routine. What I know now, and of course have studied, is that in the early days, demand feeding is important, and it's very important because that's where breast milk supply gets established. Your breasts will have as much supply as the baby is demanding, and so in the early days, in particular, for the first 6 weeks, mums do need to have.
Early days, because I know someone listening might be like, "Is that the first 3 days or the first 3 weeks?" So no. You're saying the first 6 weeks.
It's as much 6 weeks.
Sort of feed on demand. Establish.
You've got to feed on demand. Because your supply is not fully established until 6 weeks. And when I say feed on demand, let's quantify that. If you've got a baby who kind of feeds for 5 minutes, falls asleep, an hour later cries, feeds again for 5 minutes, falls asleep, an hour later feeds again for 5 minutes, falls asleep, that's not ideal feeding in the early days, even though you are supposedly there, obviously, demand feeding. It is important that a feed is actually a period of time, a focus time where this is the task at hand and this is what we're going to do. So a feed could be a 40-minute stretch because often it'll take 20 minutes on one side, a bit of a change of nappy and another kind of 15 minutes on the other side. That's a typical breastfeed outing. And so you need to keep your baby awake for that time, you know, tickle their feet, you know, keep them awake, uncover their legs, make them a little bit cooler so that they're slightly less comfortable and less drowsy and will actually feed. So you need to have a focused feed time. And then you do need to have a period of time in which little one's tummy is empty. So that would be about 2 hours at least. And then after that, you demand feeding again. So when they cry after 2 hours, you then are kind of feeding them on demand. So it's not unrestrained and access to the breast all the time, because that can, A, create, havoc on your nipples. It also can create a very irritable baby, because what happens in that first scenario that I spoke of, which is, you know, kind of feed 5 minutes, they really, all they're doing is getting the foremilk, which is very watery milk, and it often makes their tummies a little bit less settled. And so they look like more unsettled babies. So you want them to get to that good high in milk. So you want a good feed outing. But then you're really giving them a little bit of a stretch, and then the next feeding after about 2 hours. So it's not watching the clock, but it's just getting some rhythms in. And it'll take time to establish that. Then from about 6 weeks, you can start to establish a bit more of a routine. And the app does that for you. So the app will actually say feed on demand all the way through until about 6 weeks. It starts to move you towards a 2 to 3 hour routine, and then eventually 3 to 4, particularly if you're breastfeeding and bottle feeding. So, you know, feed routines do come, but it takes time for them to come. And it's certainly not in the first 6 weeks that we can be rigid around that.
Amazing. Well, I think that really explains it well. And I'm just so grateful that when we end this conversation and I have to move forward into the wilderness of a newborn again alone, I'm going to have your app, because I just think I need to have those questions and those leading guides to help me understand how to be aware of what's happening with my child and what the choices are available to me, so I can make the best decisions to get this to become a functional space for us all. So I'm very excited about that. I think you've given us such value and insight today, Meg. And for any of the new moms listening, they have a wealth of information available to them. Can you tell us today how our audience can find you from here and connect with you online?
Yeah, so I would say one of the first points of departure would be the podcast. It's called Sense by Meg Fora. And what I do in the podcast is every week I either speak to a new mum, and we've been tracking one particular mum through the whole first year of her baby's life. So if you've got a 6-week-old, there'll be an episode for you. And we track mums all the way through the first year of life. I interview all of the experts who've do the courses on my app. So Kath McGaugh, I've interviewed her on weaning. I'm interviewing Sammy Davies on choking. She's our nurse who does the choking and CPR courses. So we talk about things close to their heart and in their expertise. And then once a month, I have an interview with Bailey Schneider, who is quite a well-known personality in Cape Town. And we talk about a topic like weaning or sensory personalities or the first 3 months. In fact, for you, Christine, do go and listen to our first trimester after the baby's born, that episode, because it's really has a look at everything that goes on for the baby in the first 3 months after birth.
So it's on my list.
Good, good. I think the first place would be the podcast. And then, of course, the app. You can download it from the App Store or from the Google Play Store. It's called ParentSense, and that would be the second thing. And then my website is megforo.com, and most of the information that I've spoken about is there. And there are obviously all of these social channels as well, Instagram and Facebook. And for moms who are wanting a quick little bit of input each week, I do a Friday morning chat every week where moms can just have an open line and ask their questions, so they can come along there as well.
Amazing. Well, I'll make it easy for everyone and put the links for all of that in the podcast notes. So have a look there if you're listening now and you want to just be able to click a link and make it easy. And thank you so much, Meg, for today's conversation. I'm so grateful again, and I'm excited to embark on this journey again with you at my side.
I'm so excited. And do keep us posted. We'll all be watching out on social media for when your little bubs arrived. Very, very exciting.
I definitely will. Have a great day. We'll chat soon.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Honest Hour podcast. I hope this recording inspired you to live in your honest truth. And I encourage you, if you enjoyed the episode, to subscribe and to rate the podcast. If you would like to connect with me online, I would love to hear from you. I'm on Instagram at The Honest Hour Podcast, and my website is christinamazarek.co.za. Thank you and have a beautiful day.